Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Have you ever heard of the Great Dismal Swamp? At one point, it covered a 1,500-mile stretch from Virginia to North Carolina. Indigenous people used it as a hunting ground and a place to take refuge from European colonists. And later on, fugitive slaves would find freedom and refuge there as well, in what were called maroon colonies. My grandfather, the composer William Grant Still, wrote a piece about this swamp. And a new novel for young adults imagines what life might have been like inside a maroon colony there. It's called Freewater, and the author is Amina Lukman Dawson. She joins me now via Skype. Amina, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you so much, Celeste. I'm so happy to be here.
Now, you live in Arlington, Virginia. When did you first hear about the history of the Dismal Swamp?
I learned of the Great Dismal Swamp some 7 or 8 years ago, and that was as a result of the research of a wonderful historian by the name of Sylviane Diouf, who did a comprehensive study of the existence of maroons and maroon communities here in the United States of America and the American South.
Now, there were maroon colonies all over the place. You would find them in not just North America, but in Africa as well, in South America. Can you explain what a maroon colony is?
Absolutely. These are enslaved Africans, usually, who escaped enslavement and went and sought to live clandestine yet free lives in the wilderness that surrounded them. So let's say if there was a nearby forest or mountainous area, or as in the case of my story, Freewater, a swamp.
And often spoke Creole and had their own societies and remained pretty protected away, which sounds like this is what the society in your book did, created their own sort of universe.
Absolutely. It allows for a space where they use their own ingenuity, their own wits to survive, and in cases to really thrive. And you're right, internationally, especially in places like Jamaica, Brazil, Suriname, they had such robust communities that they're still there to this day. So in Jamaica, yeah, you can find them there, and you can see the traditions and culture that they've passed down for generations. So these are powerful spaces that allow us to see what real resistance to enslavement looks like. Their existence really does represent all we need to know about resistance.
You know, there's a lot about the Great Dismal Swamp that people don't know. I mean, I would imagine your average person doesn't even know it existed or that at some point thousands of people lived there.
Right.
I can absolutely imagine you deciding to write a nonfiction book about this history. Why instead did you write a novel for young adults?
Oh, that's such a great question. Absolutely. Now, you're right. This on its face is wonderful history to know. However, I was looking to go beyond that, in that I think that this is also creating a wonderful space for us to have a new conversation about very old topics, including our relationship and how we view the enslavement of African Americans in this country. And traditionally, we've had a lot of pain and, I guess, feelings of hardship that are absolutely relevant, but that awkwardness, that pain, that fear, that's also been a place where we haven't been able to have real connection that we all would like to have with our enslaved ancestors. And so this maroon community space, it literally creates a space where you can sort of listen and hear the voices of formerly enslaved people. And unlike those places where you were kind of traditionally put in spaces of plantations or the big house or a focus on mistreatment and victimization, instead, you are in a world where you're able to kind of breathe and experience the world through formerly enslaved people. And so I thought the use of fiction in this space was wonderful. And let me just say one more thing. fiction is a powerful tool. And I go back to my own times when I was in middle school, which is partly why it inspired me to do this. I was struck by stories that had nothing to do with me. For example, the Anne of Green Gables tale. To this day, if you mention the place Prince Edward Island to me, my ears perk up, my heart gets a little warm, and I'm like, oh my goodness, what's going on there? And it's a total involuntary reflex that I have to Anne of Green Gables, to Prince Edward Island. And it's only through a fictional tale, I have no cultural connection to the place, I know nothing other than that, that I have this feeling. And so I said, what if you could use that same fiction tool? What if you could use that powerful tool to connect people with the experiences and the lives and the world and the voices of enslaved and newly freed African Americans, and sort of washing away some of the feeling that tends to go with the awkwardness, the pain, the victimization, and really more centering who they were and allowing us to feel connected to them and understand who they were in a better way.
I actually still remember the island San Nicolas Island, which is off the coast of California, only because of the novel Island of the Blue Dolphins. I mean, those connections. Yeah, the connections you make as a kid, they last a long time.
They last a lifetime.
Yeah, they absolutely do. So this book is filled with love and joy, but it begins with some scary stuff.
Yeah.
So we have two children. Homer is 12, and his younger sister, Ada, they escape from the plantation where they have been enslaved, and they have to leave their mother behind. Their mother's recaptured. She keeps telling them, go to the river, go to the river. Homer has to make that decision, whether he leaves his mother behind and takes Ada with him or doesn't, and he continues on to try to get Ada to freedom. Yeah. How do you approach something as scary as this for young adults in a way that's not going to be too scary? I mean, it's serious, yeah. It's life-threatening, but that can be a really kind of horrifying prospect for a child.
That is true. That is true. And I think that part of what I did was allow us to hear it's particularly this portion of the story through Homer's eyes. And so you're able to kind of hear him navigating through some pretty scary things, but in a way that allows you to feel his own ability to get through them. And so at each point, he kind of, it's like, well, you know, this is the next step I have to take, and this is how I'm going to take it. And so there's a certain, I think, amount of safety that comes from that voice. And also, too, although scariness is there, it is wrapped in this sense of love and great determination. And what you really end up feeling is his extraordinary affection for his sister, his extraordinary sense of responsibility, and his extraordinary fear himself of just his own surroundings, not necessarily what could happen to them as much as like, I'm in a swamp. What am I going to do? How am I going to survive? And so these sort of survival instincts kind of pop up and allow us to sort of ride with him in a way that is, yes, you do feel that little prickle in the back of your neck, but in a way that also says, you know, I think this kid, it's going to be all right.
I am very much trying to not give anything away. The incidents that we just described happened in the very beginning of the book. I found it interesting that among the residents of Freewater, and Freewater is the settlement that Homer and Ada find, or actually they're found and brought to in the midst of the swamp, there are not just children who have escaped enslavement. There are also kids that were born there who have never known what it was like to be enslaved. What was the importance of that comparison?
It just creates a wonderful environment for sort of new conversations to happen. So, for example, yes, we have a character who is born in Freewater and has been free. She is free in her mind and her body. She is so free that she really cannot imagine a world where she isn't meant to succeed, where she isn't meant to be in the world and adventure and accomplish things all of her own. And so imagine her speaking with a newly freed person or someone who has known enslavement and hearing his voice saying, hey, you know, I've seen the world out there. You really, that's not a world for you. When what happens is, for a reader, you're able to better hear what freedom really means from both sides. And you're able to hear really what comes of enslavement and what it means to sort of grow and change and learn what it means to be free. And it's a very, I think, poignant way of understanding what enslavement does to a person and understanding what freedom means. And so I very much enjoyed those interactions, because you're able to hear sort of a bit of joy, you're able to hear a bit of sadness, you're able to hear all sorts of growth among the characters.
And a little humor.
And it's a great humor, yeah. Especially for one character, you want to say, please, you really don't want to go out into that world. It's really not better than free water. Yeah.
Amina Luqman Dawson's novel for young adults is Free Water. Amina, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you for having me so much.
To read an excerpt of Free Water, go to hereandnow.org, and let's take a few moments to hear a little more of Dismal Swamp, the piece written by my grandfather, William Grant Still.